The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Another heartbreaker for the Boston Red Sox, dropping the first game against the Milwaukee Brewers in Milwaukee, 3-2, falling to 27-29 on the season. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Terry Cushman Jr. and Chris Felico, and we are the Bastards of Boston. Now, it was really a tale of two Garretts today, as Whitlock came away to really throw away a game that Crochet pitched a gem in. Now, the pitching, of course, wasn't a problem per se. You got to score more than two runs to win. But I know that that big run late that Whitlock gave up really made the game feel out of reach. And that's something that is becoming really systematic for the 2025 Red Sox, is seeing us trailing by two runs or even one run sometimes and thinking, man, this game is out of reach. What were your guys' impressions?
You go first, Chris.
You go.
All right. Well, you know, for me, that game was over after the second inning. When we didn't score in the top of the second, when we had a guy on third, I kind of felt like then the game was over. I know it was early, but just the way our offense has been struggling, I have no confidence. This team's not exciting. It's not even fun to watch. If I wasn't on this podcast, I probably wouldn't even watch them, to be honest with you. In fact, I might not if I'm not scheduled to be on the podcast at this point. That's how bad it's getting. But in all seriousness, I have somewhat of a controversial take, and this is not a knock on Crochet in the slightest, but he's been phenomenal this season. However, a trend that I'm starting to see, and the more I dig into the numbers, it's actually been habitual all season. He gives up runs early in a lot of games, either the first or second inning. And while that might not seem like the biggest deal for a normal MLB team, with the Boston Red Sox offense, it is almost detrimental, and almost it's to a point where it's killed us. We're a team that builds off momentum. We need to score first. And in 7 out of his 12 starts, he's either given up a run in the first inning or the first or second batter of the second inning, which again, seemingly doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But with our offense, we've lost all those games. So, or he has not gotten a non-decision in those games. So again, I'm not blaming Crochet, but it's just something I picked up on. You know, sometimes I think you need your ace, your horse, to kind of pitch to your offense, and knowing the situation and knowing the struggles that we're in. And we're all just kind of not getting it done. Again, not blaming him, but it's a travesty at this point. Terry?
So, about the Whitlock thing, he pitched, what was it? Did he get through the full eighth or did they have to yank him? I can't remember. I think he got through the full eighth, actually.
Yeah, he was the only relief pitcher to come out of the pen today.
Yeah. So, he came out in the seventh when Crochet came out, as you were basically just saying. I don't like the way he's being utilized. Like, I'm fine with putting the loss on partly on him today. I think the offense really shoulders a huge part of the blame here. But I just think you need to keep it simple with Whitlock, and he just needs one clean inning. Like, he just needs to be in that bullpen, warm up, and I'm going to go out there. I'm going to get three outs, and then my day is going to be done. And I'm gonna pass it on to the next best reliever, whether that's Slayton after him, whether it's Chapman if it happens to be the ninth inning, or maybe, I mean, we've seen Chapman pitch some eighth innings if there's lefties right there. But I don't think Whitlock is gonna settle into a groove until we just go a more traditional route with him. He's not a two-inning guy. You know, when he finishes an inning, goes into the dugout, and then comes back out for another inning, he's just not the same. He's not consistent. And he came out and he didn't really get the bottom of the eighth off to a terrible start. He got a line out right away. Then he got a walk, which, you know, not ideal, but then he struck out Rhys Hoskins. And then after that, it just got away from him. Sal Frelick singled. He walked Caleb Durbin, then Eric Hasse, their catcher, hit a base hit, which scored a run, and it was a big run. And I just don't like the way Cora's utilizing him. But here's my chief complaint today. This is the one thing, it's driving me absolutely nuts. I don't want to see it anymore. I don't care how slow of a runner Carlos Narvaez is. I will trade his better defense after that inning and possibly one more at bat, which will be a quality at bat, for the slow speed. Now, if it's the ninth inning and there's one or two outs and he's on second base, okay, do it then. If Connor Wong blows it in extras for us, I can kind of live with that. I still prefer Narvaez to be the base runner regardless. I think you're trading too much liability for his lack of speed. I don't like it. And then, so he gets pinch run four. I forget which inning that was. It might've been the seventh or the eighth. And then Wong comes into the game and fine, you know, defensively, nothing got past him, but he's extremely prone to that. And then what happens? You've got runners on, what was it, first and third, something like that. Mm-hmm. And then Wong comes up. He doesn't have a home run all year. He doesn't have an RBI. He doesn't even have an extra base hit. He's literally, other than maybe Trevor Story, and I think we're picking our poison at this point, Wong or Story, you're screwing yourself. That is the worst case scenario, and you can't pinch hit him because he's the only other catcher. So in the less than 1% chance Alex Cora ever listens to this podcast, or maybe a player listens to it and then tells him, stop pinch running for Narvaez. Don't do it. If that was his spot today, and it would have been, there's at least a 30 or 40% chance he can punch in that runner to tie the game and send it into extras. And had that happen, Slayton's available, Chapman's available, one or two other guys. I don't think we trust Zach Kelly, but anyway, that's my big takeaway. We'll get to the offense shortly, but Narvaez needs to stay in the game from now on.
No, you're absolutely right. You know, that was a big mistake, one of the big mistakes. And just another example, and I hate to harp on, about Cora. I don't want to be this big anti-Cora guy, but it just seems like he manages to lose games. You know, he always has these little turning points, these key decisions that seem to defy logic. Narvaez and Wong are not that far apart when it comes to their speed. Wong's quicker, sure, especially for a catcher. But in that situation, it's far more important to keep your best guy in, especially when it's a close game and there's a chance that he might come up to bat. And the difference right now between Narvaez and Connor Wong at the plate is night and day. You have a guy who's barreling a ball at an elite rate, who is consistently finding gaps in the defense. And then you have Connor Wong, who has as many RBIs this season, I believe, as all of us combined. So it's just unbelievable. One big thing that sort of baffled me, and I agree with what you said about Whitlock, especially this season, I think he's a guy who sort of needs to get his mojo back, his confidence back. He's a guy who needs to come out and just have a clean inning and not have the weight of the world on his shoulders. But one thing that I had to notice, I just had to, was Garrett Crochet being at 92 pitches to finish the sixth inning and coming out to pitch the seventh. And I thought to myself, back to that 85 pitch pull or whatever it was. It was around there. And it's just, again, I'm thinking to myself, you're going to work him again hard. You're going to force him to empty the tank again. And now maybe in the next start, we need him to go the distance. And Cora's going to say, oh, well, he can't, unfortunately. He just did last start. It makes no sense to me. You do have Garrett Whitlock. You have the majority of the pen who was available to come in today. The bulk, you know, didn't pitch yesterday. And it just was one of those situations where I couldn't quite understand the obsession. It seems like Cora can't make up his mind with Crochet. Is he managing long term? You know, does he want to keep him healthy and fresh and all this? Or does he want to win today's game? Today, obviously, he managed to do neither of those things. And, you know, that might be a good point to transition to really the reason we lost the game, which is this lineup. When the lineup card was announced today, I was disgusted. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Christian Campbell being hit in the cleanup spot makes no sense. You cannot get a colder man available. Just take the pressure off the kid. Move him down in the lineup. He's playing center field again. It's driving me crazy. And on top of that, you have Story and Hamilton in the same lineup, which if that's not a white flag, I don't know what is. What was your guys' reaction to some of the at-bats and offensive production or offensive lack of production today? The number that sticks out to me until that ninth inning when Jaron Duran did get an RBI single, they were 0-7 with runners in scoring position, just wasted opportunities all day, bad grounding into double plays, even from Willier, who I love, just driving me crazy.
Yeah, I think it's just been more of the same. I wish I could say I was shocked at this point. I think all the points you just made, Nick, like whether we're talking about Cora, whether we're talking about the lineup, whether we're talking about at-bats, there is just absolutely no consistency. Well, the only consistency we have is that we find ways to lose, right, and not put together good at-bats and lose one-run games. Other than that, there is no consistency. Cora can't figure out what he wants to do with Crochet, whether he wants to ride him until his arm falls off or he wants to reserve him. We have no idea how to manage these kids, right? Like Christian Campbell, flip a coin. I have no idea where he's going to play tomorrow, if he's even playing at all, right? Because that might be on the table at this point, the way he's putting together at bats. I'm really at a loss with this offense. Let's face it. Bregman was the only consistency that we had in this lineup from the start of the season till the point he went down. Devers has started to get hot, but he has his moments. And everyone else, it's peaks and valleys, my friend. So I don't know what the answer is at this point. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say, Ter.
Yeah, it's a good observation there with Campbell in the four hole. I mean, the guy is... He's got what, 7 or 8 hits in roughly his last 60 at bats, or that might have been coming into yesterday. He did get a couple of hits. And despite getting those hits, I still didn't think he looked good at the plate. I mean, he got the bat on the ball and he put him in play, and he did have kind of a bloop single today. But the real key at bat, as you guys kind of alluded to, was in the eighth inning. We had no outs, runner on first and third. I forget who the third base runner was, but Campbell hits into a double play. The run did come home, but now you got two outs with nobody on. And
just as a quick correction, he actually did outrun the double play. It was Willier who grounded in after that to end the inning.
Oh, was it? My bad. So that was the Willier double
play. It was a double play ball, though. You're right about that.
Okay.
I think Devers scored on that to make it 2-1.
Was it Devers? Okay. Yeah. I thought it was. I didn't want to.
Yeah, that's right. And that is when Narvaez came out of the game for Connor Wong.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's just, it's a problem. And it's also been a hallmark of Alex Cora's tenure to just have an absolutely terrible hitter into that four hole. He was doing it with Bobby Dalbec in 2023. I don't know how many times that happened. And I used to scoff when Ref Snyder would end up there, but as we know, he's got an insanely high OPS against lefties. So I kind of backed off of that, and I'm okay with Ref Snyder hitting there, even though it's still not ideal. Like, a big market team shouldn't have Rob Ref Snyder there, but it's passable, and it's not passable for Campbell. You're putting tons of pressure on him. And today I kind of posed the question on social media, and it kind of divided the fan base. I was kind of surprised. I asked, I'm like, should Campbell be optioned down to Worcester to get his head right? And it doesn't have to be a long thing. I mean, just a quick reset, you know, a couple weeks, maybe bring him back, see what happens. I don't know. And I'm not saying I want that and that I necessarily think it's the best thing, but when you see him struggle, you're constantly asking yourself, well, how do you fix him? Like, what's the solution? And I think that is the solution for some people. And so with the four hole, I don't really know what you do. I mean, I like that Narvaez is starting to hit, you know, closer, you know, basically in the heart of the order. But here's the thing, and this is what I was getting to. A week ago, when Alex Bregman was still in the lineup, you're still looking at the bottom half like, oh, yuck. I mean, you'll have Hamilton in there, Story, Rafaela, and Rafaela's like disappeared. It was a nice story for about a week and a half. Now he's like 1-for-26 or something. Mm-hmm. And so you're, even with Bregman in there, you're like, ew, now Bregman is gone and it's worse. And this part's on Breslow now. You've got to do something here. And maybe the plan, maybe they've punted by not doing something. You are going to see moves happen. I mean, the Yankees are looking for a right-handed third baseman. They're already kind of, you're going to see moves made. Not blockbuster ones, but moves will get made in the month of June, the early part of June. It does happen. So it's incumbent upon Breslow, if you want to save this season, a lot of money got invested. You extended Crochet to big money, your biggest pitching contract in quite some time. The Bregman deal, not long, but massive AAV at $40 million, the biggest ever. You got to do something. You got to do something. You can't, even calling up Roman Anthony, that's basically imperative, and I can't wrap my head around why he's still in the Worcester lineup every day and not the Fenway one. Even calling up Anthony, that's not enough. Another move has to be made here at some point. Go get a first baseman or a third baseman that you might be able to do something else with later on. I don't know, but this is a flawed team. And before I hand it back to you guys, you should have won today. Well, you could have given yourself a much better chance to win today. You've got either Richard Fitz or a bullpen game tomorrow against a team that is 16-10 at home. And then who's pitching Wednesday? Do we know that yet?
I believe Bayo.
Bayo? Okay.
Yeah, Bayo versus Peralta. Oh, boy.
And Peralta's, you know, essentially their ace.
Yeah.
So we're getting swept is what I was trying to say.
Yeah. You know, what really is frustrating me about this team start to finish is injuries now have taken away two pieces of this lineup that you need to go outside to replace, it seems. Like him or hate him, and as cold as Casas was this year, you can't deny that he had upside of a guy who at least did have an 800 OPS in the past. A guy who showed flashes of good discipline and good power in the past. And so for the first month, I was sort of willing to stomach that lack of production from him, saying, well, you know, I've seen what he's capable of, and I'm hoping he can bounce back to it. Now we have Abraham Toro, who aside from really this past weekend, what has he done? He spent all of last year looking completely lost. He spent a good chunk of his time this year looking completely lost. And recency bias from a couple good games is causing a lot of people to fall in love with him. I'm not going to. A big problem here is that aside from Durant, aside from Devers, aside from Abreu, aside from Narvaez, and Narvaez is the one who maybe belongs the least in that group of four players, who is there in this lineup? There is such just a hole left behind where Alex Bregman was. And there even was a vast hole, like you mentioned, Terry, in the bottom half of the lineup before Bregman exited it. And it's causing all of these guys to have to be better than they are, I think. What can we truly expect from Campbell? He's a rookie. He's shown good signs. He's shown bad signs. What can we expect from Meyer or Anthony in their first season up here? What can we expect from Trevor Story, who is Trevor Story, and David Hamilton, who's David Hamilton? And as good as Sogard has been, he actually has been a pretty decent call-up, I don't expect his production to continue. The red on his Savant page right now, I cannot see persisting long-term once the sample size becomes substantial. Even then, though, why was Sogard not in the lineup tonight? Out of him, Story, Hamilton, he is easily the best, and I would have felt a lot more confident with him in the starting lineup than Hamilton, who really the most success we got tonight out of a hitter, aside from, you know, Devers did walk three times, very nice. Duran got on base three times. One of the better guys tonight, one of the better guys who was putting up good plate appearances was Rob Refsnyder, who only came in partway through the game. You know, two good at bats, ended up getting on base both times. It's just frustrating. I saw a lot of people, quite frankly, huffing copium, you know, before this game, saying, no, I like this lineup. How? How can you possibly say that after everything you've seen? It's bad. And it's bad because the roster is thin. It's bad because it's way too top heavy. It's just bad for a variety of reasons. And I want to know, what are we doing with a guy like Story? Not just front office-wise, not just what do we do? Do we DFA him? Do we try to trade him fully retained? Do we, you know, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about behind the scenes with Pete Fatsy and the coaching staff. We have guys like Trevor Story, David Hamilton, now Christian Campbell, who have dug themselves into an impossibly deep hole. They would need to be the hottest hitters in baseball for months to dig themselves out of the OPS that they're really getting themselves into. We're talking month-long slumps, looking lost, bad at bats, non-competitive, chasing pitches, whiffing on pitches, refusing to walk, not being able to hit. It's just a bad approach. And I don't know what to do to fix this. I've already heard some people say that they're out on the Red Sox as a playoff team. For me, I've made my peace with that. Make it a development year, but in order to make that a success, you have to develop. And that means getting all three kids at their primary positions and making sure that we don't cost ourselves long-term, not meaning in October, meaning in 2026 and 27.
All great points, Nick. And I think really what the underlying message or theme and everything that you just said is, we don't have development. We don't have a plan for any of those things. And the reality is, and I've come to terms with this, is we have a philosophy issue And I think it starts at the top of this organization and it is spilled over. You know, I wrote an article about it yesterday. I caught some stuff from it from some fans that still want to believe that this was a great team on paper and that there were just a couple of injuries that have derailed the season when meanwhile this team has sucked long before the injuries, okay, if we're being honest with ourselves. And, you know, I even remember one of the first episodes that we did this season. Not that I got into a debate, but I politely or respectfully disagreed with Jeremy because I posed the question, this was when and if Trevor Story gets hurt, because it's going to happen inevitably. And he was like, oh, we're built this year to be able to handle that, whether we're talking about the depth in AAA and then the bench for this season. And I disagreed. And we're watching it right before our eyes because we're calling up our best guns from AAA, the prospects, the big three, the faces of the future, and they're doing diddly. And it's not their fault. Like, they're kids. And it's a lot to expect from them. But the truth is, we've got questions about the pitching. What's Andrew Bailey doing? Nothing. He's not fixing any of the issues that we talk about every single night. What's Fatsy doing with the hitters that are all struggling? Not just one, not just two, almost half the lineup. Nothing. Right? And when we look at the philosophy of the Red Sox, like, we all got excited, including me. We added Bregman to Devers, but that's it. We added Bregman to Devers. Who else is in the slot? Yeah, we have Duran, who's a nice piece, but, like, he's not quite an all-star, but, like, we love him. He's homegrown. He bleeds Boston, etc. Narvaez, yeah, nice pickup, but, like, not necessarily a star. Wong is who he is at this point. Christian Campbell, a rookie. Abreu, a nice piece of a trade of the Christian Vasquez trade, but, you know, he's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Let's not even talk about Story because all of us will get sick doing that. Then you have Toro. You've got Hamilton. You've got Ref Snyder. And then Rafael, who's a potential gold glover but can't hit for his weight. Like, that's what we did. We added Bregman to that, and we expected to be a playoff team. The philosophy is flawed with this team, and until it changes from top to bottom, you know, you talked about Cora, right, and the decisions he makes. And I think, Terry, you talked about even a couple of years ago, and it's bleeding into the last couple of seasons, but including this one, I remember Bobby Dalbec. It was almost like he kept putting him in the same damn situation, waiting for him to be successful. So you'd be like, ha, I told you so. And it's like, yeah, great. He finally got a hit. He's 1-for-30. Congratulations. He still sucks, according to this number. Right? And we see the same thing. We put the same players in the same positions to fail, hoping that somehow they succeed. And even if they do, it's like the back of their baseball card still sucks. And, like, we need to not suck. Like Ref Snyder said it today, we suck. And he's right. This team sucks. And, like, I hate to be that blunt, and I hate to be that negative, but that's what I truly believe at this point. This is a systemic issue, and it's kind of comical because, like, there's people like, oh, well, like, Cora is the guy to replace Breslow. What in our right mind gives us any confidence that he's going to fix a damn thing if he becomes the GM? He's never been a GM. To be honest with you, he was good as a manager for one season. I know we all want to say, oh, he's done great with nothing. We haven't won. I've seen guys win with less in a shorter period of time. He hasn't even had one good season with a okay team. And then you have half the fan base that think this team is good, minus the injuries. And he didn't do good with that either before the injuries. So he's going to be the president of baseball operations, and that's going to fix it? Doubtful. So I think it's a look in the mirror. I doubt we will look in the mirror, but I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am. Terry.
Yeah, so some guy who calls himself Butt Munch Cookie is in our stream right now. That's what he called himself. I mean, if he can show me a birth certificate with that, I'll let him co-host the next show. But he's always in the stream and has a lot to say. Up above, before I get to the really relevant one, he says, quote of the night, I can't read the Ray Rice one. That's a little dark.
The one
above that one, he goes, I trust Zach Kelly like I trust gas station sushi. And so, yeah, but the real one here, he says, I'm not an Alex Cora hater, but I think a change might need to be made. I think the culture is not good and you have to start somewhere. Now, in short, I sort of agree with that. I think all managers run their courses eventually, and changes need to be made. I think Alex Cora would do better on a win now team. You know, the Mariners would have been a good one had that worked out a year ago. The Reds, where Francona just went, I think would be a real good one. And they're not, I mean, the Cardinals are playing really well right now. And can't really think. The Brewers are under 500. We'll fix that, though.
He would have
been
perfect for the Yankees a couple of years ago. I mean, I hate to say it.
Yeah.
He honestly would have been.
If we fired him tomorrow, Rob Thompson in Philly is getting fired, and then he's going to go manage the Phillies.
Yep.
Dave Dombrowski is going to call him back. But I shouldn't. They're in first place right now, and they've won 10 in a row. But I bet Dombrowski would love to call him back. But here's the problem with firing Cora. I would still do it, don't get me wrong, but the guy above him who still thinks it's a good idea to have Roman Anthony in the minors is still going to be calling those shots. So I don't really know. Like, this, that's just how bad it is at every level of the organization. Cora can't manage the bullpen. He can't fill out a lineup card. Breslow can't put the right guys on the roster to give us that shot in the arm we need. You can't make any sense of this. We come on here every night and we live and die with this team, just like everybody listening, but we can't make sense of it either. You're on a ship with a million holes in it and you're trying to plug them all. And then another one pops up somewhere and you just can't. This is the penalty of the post Heim Bloom era. This is the penalty of not signing good enough players, then really putting a guy in there. I mean, Bloom, I thought it was going to work out awesome, but it didn't. And there's consequences with putting a guy in there that's never done it before. And so there's just so many consequences that we're still feeling the effects of right now of the last 5 or 6 years. And it's carried into this year in a really ugly way.
I have a question. So how palpable do you think it is that outside of John Henry, right? Like, cause I think that that's the majority of why we could not find a real GM. Right. I think we would all agree with that. But like, let's remove him from the situation to some degree, because I truly do believe that there was already some sort of talk or like theory or thought that like Core was the guy to kind of become the GM, even when Heim was still here, when he was kind of on his way out. How much of a contributing factor do you think that also was that like a GM didn't want to come here thinking like, okay, yeah, like he's going to be my manager, but like he's also breathing down my neck. The organization loves him. I don't necessarily know, you know, John Henry doesn't seem too committed to winning, so I'm not going to be able to spend my way to make this a good team, which means this guy's even more down my neck if we don't win. And I'm not saying that's what it was, but like I'm the more like we keep continuing down this path, the more that starts to become a question in the back of my mind.
You know, to me, the problems here, it always comes from the top. And I think that John Henry has unfortunately become a bit of a toxic owner since winning his last World Series. Heim Bloom, I don't think anybody would deny that he was playing with handcuffs on. I don't think he really thought trading Mookie Betts was the right decision. I think that he was told, you're going to get the job, but you need to make sure that we cut payroll. And the big way to do that is to trade Mookie Betts, try to get some of Price's contract off the books. I really do think that, you know, John Henry, I think this last offseason recommitted himself to the team, at least in some regards, at least on paper. But we're only spending $199 million this year, as far as payroll goes, I'm pretty sure. And even if that is the truth, that he recommitted, it's the first year that he's recommitted. How Heim Bloom was treated, he was brought in, and he was made out to be a scapegoat. Now, that doesn't mean I think he was perfect. I think he made a lot of bad mistakes while he was here, and I do agree with the firing. But ultimately, we've brought in Breslau, who has made, again, some good moves. But in my mind, I always go back to that sale trade I, you know, I mentioned to you guys privately the other night, I didn't like the Sale extension back in 2019 when it came early before, you know, his final year was even up. But I didn't like trading him either because he was freak injured always. But it wasn't like his shoulder was falling off necessarily. It wasn't like his elbow was blown out. And I said, why do you trade a pitcher like that? And sure enough, he goes on to win the Cy Young the next year, you know, with the Braves. And where is Grissom? Where's the great return? He's down in AAA. We lose a first baseman. Grissom isn't the answer, apparently. We lose a third baseman. Grissom isn't the answer, apparently. I think what I would pinpoint as the big mistake that the Red Sox have been making for the past 4 years now, it has been a lack of killer instinct, a lack of decisiveness. They have been so scared to be a losing team, even for a year, that they grip on to the trade deadline and they do this buying, selling nonsense and they get guys to say that they care, say they're trying to win, but they don't have the impact. Imagine if we did trade Eovaldi. You know, we got Willier Abreu and Emmanuel Valdez, who was okay and is still starting somewhere else. We managed to get a little return for him. We got them for half a year of Christian Vasquez. Imagine if we did the same with JD. Imagine if we did the same with Bogarts. Imagine if we did the same with Eovaldi. We were willing to trade away Mookie Betts. Look at how that's aged. But we're not willing to trade away half a year. We're not willing to get to the deadline and say, you know, maybe this just isn't our year. Let's punt it. Let's get some talent in the farm system. Let's save some money. And let's go into the offseason with $40, $50, $80 million in our pocket and figure out what to do next. It just seems like we teeter on the edge of this and that. And what have we been getting for the past 4 years? I'll tell you, 500 baseball. We're the baseball equivalent pretty much of that like 2010 Cincinnati Bengals. You know, but at least they made it to the wild card.
So there were a few problems with Heim. I mean, the pitching infrastructure never really was a thing ever, and it's becoming that now. That's like the one and only strength I think Breslow has brought. It's the only thing I like. That's the only reason I'm not calling for his firing. But you know, Bloom had what they called analysis paralysis. And at the deadline, a good example in what ended up being his final trade deadline, 2023, he could have traded Justin Turner for Edward Cabrera of the Marlins, one for one. Now, Cabrera was a bit of a mess, but had the potential. I mean, I just pulled him up this year. I mean, he's got an ERA just under five, but he strikes out more than one per inning. So with the right pitching program, I think he could be a middle of the rotation guy at least. That would have been a great opportunity for the Red Sox. I don't know if it would have worked, but it was just an example of something Heim didn't take advantage of. And we're still, I mean, his two signature moves, Story and Yoshida, we're paying for that big time right now, especially Story. He would be a great farm director. And yeah, if he proves me wrong and he makes a juggernaut out of that St. Louis team, I'll eat my words and I'll take the L for it and I'll give him credit. But it just seems kind of far-fetched based on a lot of aspects of his tenure here. And I forget who I told this to. I think it was a private conversation. Like, personality wise, if I could pick between having a beer with Heim or a beer with Breslow, I really would pick Heim. Heim has a good vibe and, you know, yeah, I respect that. And Breslow,
he was always at the minor league games.
Well, I was about to get to that, but real quick with Breslow, he's just got no personality. He's just vanilla, not personable, not relatable. Just
he seems like a robot.
He hides behind his desk, and I don't think Cora likes him. I don't know how the front office thinks of him, but here's the thing, and this was a huge problem, and partly why we ended up with Breslow. When they fired Bloom, Cora got his extension before Breslow came in. So that was all done, and next manager, guess, or the next GM or whatever, chief baseball officer, guess what? You're stuck with Cora. that was a big reason why some people said no. Why do I want to come into an organization where he's going to be way more popular than me and the deck is stacked? But what was even worse than that, all of the long-tenured guys, Brian O'Halloran, Raquel Ferreira, Eddie Romero, they were staying too. So now they're going to be more outnumbered. And you just mentioned, well, Haim went down to the farm. Well, what had happened by mid-2023 was nobody was talking with him. Like, they all kind of knew, we're getting rid of him. Let's just disassociate. Let's be polite, but let's just kind of move away. And so I think Haim kind of saw the writing on the wall a little bit. And he's like, well, I'll go hang out in Worcester and see what they're up to and make my rounds. I think he went to Portland once or twice. I think that was a big part of it, because by midsummer, things just weren't going well. And, you know, he and Cora were more strained. And I remember the day before Haim got fired, I think it was a doubleheader. They had or something. And Haim would go out and he would help pick up trash. You'd see clips of him with a trash bag cleaning up trash. And he'd kind of been doing that. And then he was taking a break and he was kind of leaning against one of the pillars. And he noticed that the camera was like honed in on him. And he kind of made eye contact with the camera and then abruptly turned around and then walked into the concourse area to get away. And I'm like, oh, it's coming. It's coming. And yeah. But that's a big part of it. That's why we have Breslow. The reset button really needs to be hit on that front office. Everybody needs to go. And this is getting to be longer winded than I wanted to be, but I've pointed out when Theo went from Boston to the Cubs, he did an okay job rebuilding that team, but they never had a stud rotation. They never had a good bullpen. And it was a very short-lived dynasty. And I think time had kind of passed Theo by. Like, front offices are different now. They think differently, you know, with the analytics and sabermetrics and all this. And, you know, a lot of them have evolved. And we've got these dinosaurs. All those executives, O'Halloran, Ferreira, Romero, they've all been here since the early to mid-2000s. Like, they're in their third decade. You have to hit the reset button.
Yeah, you know, just steal a quote from Moneyball, you know, the movie, adapt or die. It's very true.
We die every year.
Yeah, it's an ever-changing sport. And, you know, you see a lot of guys who never really updated their opinions on launch angles from the juiced balls. You know, 2019, launch angle meant a whole different thing from what it means right now. You know, obviously when that Twins lineup, you know, broke the record, I was like, okay, something's wrong here. I think that was the wake up call for everyone. It's true. You know, you need to keep an open mind. You need to keep looking at the numbers and you need to ultimately let wins be your compass. If it's not winning, it's not working. If I told you in my crystal ball back in the offseason that the Orioles would be dead last, so far in the basement, it's unbelievable. We would be laughing, jumping up and down. We would be saying, oh, dude, this is our year. Nothing's going to stop us. And then that's where sort of the monkey's paw sort of curls. Be careful what you wish for, because it's like, oh, yeah, but you guys will just be right above them. This was a prime opportunity for us to pounce. And we've just been sitting on our hands waiting to start winning, starting to play to our talent, you know, as many people said. And I keep wondering, when do wins start to matter? When do losses start to matter? Because I was told back in April, losses don't matter. It's early. Well, we're two games below 500. It kind of feels like these losses are mattering.
Yeah, I think the Sox actually just heard the adapt or die wrong, because to their credit, they find new ways to die every year. So they are adapting in the manner of which they die. So maybe at some point that dying turns to winning. So,
yeah,
it's like those early South Park seasons where Kenny would die. And yeah. Red Sox are Kenny.
We are. We really are. We're the Kenny of the MLB.
Yeah. All right. Let's go ahead and just get the matchups up now. So we don't, do we know officially yet if it's, well, I guess this will tell me.
It's still to be determined on MLB.com. I saw some speculation. I see Kelly was sent down. Fitz hasn't officially been called up yet, as far as I know, but there's some speculation that maybe Fitz could be starting. We know Criswell is available. Maybe it's, maybe with Criswell and Fitz, they could sort of patchwork together, you know, because Fitz will likely be on a pitch count anyway, if he does come up. And we're facing off against Aaron Civale, I believe is how it's pronounced. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Savali's been a, you know, basically a career number four type guy. You know, he'll give you a chance to win, but I think he has been, he's pitched, well, he's made two starts, must have been injured because the first one was on March 30th against the Yankees, only lasted three innings, gave up five earned in those three innings. And then he pitched several days ago against the Pittsburgh Pirates, four innings pitched, two earned runs, walked two, struck out three. So looks like he's kind of working his way back from injury. So we don't know what you're going to get. I mean, there's been a handful of opposing pitchers where I'm like, ah, we got this. We ought to crush that guy. And then five innings later, we haven't put up a run yet. So could be that. But I don't know. But Fitz and Criswell, I mean, that sounds pretty good. You should get at least seven innings between the two.
Yeah, I would like to see that. I mean, I do think that Fitz's return, big part of this team, aside from the offensive struggles, Bayo and Houck, I mean, those two melting down completely has really messed us up. So Fitz coming back, please look good. Please look good. That's all I can ask you. Richard Fitz, if you can hear me, you're our only hope.
That's if he pitches.
Yeah.
I still have my doubts that, well, somehow he won't find his way into the starting lineup. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, even if he does and it's a mixture of him and Criswell, even if it's just him, it seems like right now we're like everyone's get right or get healthy team. It's hard to have any confidence at this point. I mean, right now our best case scenario is we're getting tomorrow because we're not winning the day after tomorrow. So,
yeah, you know, if you look at the offensive numbers that the Sox have put on season long, we're top 10 in a lot of great stats, but I want to know what happens if you remove outliers, if you remove those games where we scored 19, you know.
Yeah, football scores.
Because we had quite a few of those this season. We have had a few blowouts go in our favor. And I really wonder if you remove those, what's our runs per game looking like? Because it's not feeling good.
Yeah, no joke. The Sox probably had more games with more than 20 points or runs than the Patriots did last season. So
you're right.
It's pretty wild to say. And still, we're two games under 500.
Yeah, well, it's been a nice therapy session tonight. I think our expectations are pretty low tomorrow. I mean, today we had Garrett Crochet, so you feel like somehow you'll find a way to get a W, but tomorrow will be a major upset if the Red Sox can pull it off. But we will be back, I think. Are you with us tomorrow again, Nick? I can't remember.
Yes, I am.
Okay, you, myself, and Jason Kelly will be on, and the shit show will continue. Everyone, take care.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.